It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Thursday, March 4th, 2020, and it is time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 179 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I am Maxion, and I have my fellow nerd and connoisseur of comedy, not just the first option, but the best option, Mr. Lom Galuka, also known as Mr. Nice Guy 425. And we are here to bring you an hour in the nerdiest stuff related to video games. A quick shout out to our returning sponsor, Game Insider Magazine, for sponsoring the show. Mr. Nice Guy, how the heck are you, man?
Dude, I'm doing all right, man. I'm hanging in there. I'm ready to get out of the house more frequently and do what I do, man, and just be out doing my thing, man. But I'm good. Other than that, I got no complaints, man. Snow is melting here in Illinois. Just doing my thing, man. Not too much exciting to say.
Well, I mean, I think that's exciting. Even if you don't, I think it's exciting.
What's new with you, man? What's new in your life?
Man, what is new in my life? I live a very uninteresting life. Frankly, I don't think I could compare with you or most other people. Really, it's just sort of the same stuff. I mean, the weather's getting nicer. There is one thing.
Okay, tell me. What's up? What's up? Talk to me.
Mrs. the Mac and I, we celebrated 1 year of living here, where we are now, in rural western Nebraska.
Time flies, man. It doesn't seem like it's been that long.
Well, it doesn't, and yet at the same time, it seems like it's been the longest year of my life.
Really? Okay.
We moved here. I like to joke that we moved here... it would have been the second, so when we normally would have recorded.
Yeah.
But I like to joke that we moved here the day before toilet paper ran out.
Okay.
And as it so happens, we decided to celebrate 1 year by having ourselves a little fire and burning something symbolic of our first year.
Nice.
And I struggled a lot to find something symbolic of the first year to burn in order to say goodbye 2020. But I found it. A news article from the Washington Post dated March 2nd, 2020, talking about panic buying.
Okay.
And you know, toilet paper and all
that. Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
It was the perfect symbol for the last year and more specifically that snapshot moment in time of when we got here and that time thereafter. So, you know, had a little fire, burned that, and kind of said goodbye to the last year in, I felt like, what was an appropriate way. But that is honestly the only interesting thing that's happened to me, I think, since we got together last. I'll try to be more interesting in the future is what I'm saying.
No, dude, you know what? I've just been doing the regular stuff, which is playing games, watching shows, and just quarantining, right? Even though I haven't caught anything. So I have nothing exciting to say until we get to that segment of the show. So, Mac, on that note, I say we do what we do best and hop right into that gaming news, my friend. What do you think about that?
Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is episode 179, Mac, of Two Nerds in a Pod. We're 179% of the way to 200 episodes. Not really. But anyway, dude, this first story is one that I think is super cool, and we have some people in the chat who are PC gamers. So if you don't know about the Aya Neo, you're about to. This is from notebookcheck.com, and it says, it doesn't have an author on there, but it says, a few months have passed since Aya unveiled the Neo, a handheld console built on AMD's Ryzen 5 4500U APU. Since then, the Aya Neo founder has been shown to average 30 to 35 frames per second in Cyberpunk 2077, albeit probably at minimum quality settings. The Aya originally chose to sell the Neo founder in China, but now the company has announced that it will be releasing the device globally via Indiegogo. There's some typos here. Mac, bottom line, I sent you this article in advance. This thing looks like a Nintendo Switch, kind of, but it has more buttons. It's more sleek. Mm-hmm. The controls do not come off, and it's basically a handheld PC that you can use for gaming, you can use for whatever. It's going to cost $6.99. What do you think about the price point and the usefulness of something like this?
Well, my initial knee-jerk reaction would be to say something like, well, I mean, why buy a handheld PC like that when I could just put together a PC for that kind of money? Which I can't really.
Yeah, you can't.
And especially because graphics cards have had their prices driven through the roof, I think it's difficult to venture a guess as to whether or not I would even be able to get something close to that for that kind of money. However,
yeah.
There is a lot to be said about where that $700 could go in a computer that you already had.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think my initial reaction is I'm just like, you know, I couldn't build my own computer for that, you know, and compete, but I could take a already existing computer and really give it a fighting chance of outperforming that that amount.
But do we think that that's what they're trying to accomplish? I think that this is more of a novelty item, right? Like, this is not for someone who doesn't have a PC.
So who is it for, then?
I think it's for someone who has a PC and also has too much money and wants to be able to do these games on the go or do them in bed, right?
But then again, isn't that accurate of almost everything? This is for somebody who has X and too much money?
I don't know if it's accurate for everything, but for stuff like this, like for electronics, for tech, yeah, for sure. But I don't think that this is meant to compete with your desktop. I think this is meant to supplement your desktop. And it comes with a dock as well. It comes with an optional dock. So it could, in that sense, you're right, it could be used in place of a desktop. But I think this is just kind of a cool thing. Like, yo, I like to game, and sometimes I want to play, you know, Valorant while I'm laying in bed, right? Or whatever game it may mm-hmm. be. You know, League of Legends, Teamfight Tactics, you know, Fortnite. And I want to do it with PC-level performance, not the Nintendo Switch. So I want this thing. And I think $6.99, reasonable. Not that I will be buying one. But for what this does, for giving you PC-level performance on the go, I think that this is a good price.
You know, perhaps. I'm not 100% there. I think that I would prefer a smaller price tag. Although, I'll tell you one thing I do quite like about it. The color scheme has a sort of, was it called atomic purple?
Yeah, that's what it looks like, yeah.
Yeah, that sort of transparent-y purple that we saw on a lot of Nintendo products back in the day. I very much like that sort, those sorts of
the Game Boy Advance type, or Game Boy Color, the clear one type of vibe. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So I do like the vibe that it's giving off. I don't know if it's enough to swing me that direction. I think I'm kind of enjoying where my, you know, where my play is on the computer. I don't know as I desire to take that experience on the go very much. Even when I was at my in-laws' place and had a chance to try out their Switch, play Breath of the Wild and the like, I only wanted to do that on the screen, on the television screen. I just don't think I'm the type of person who enjoys that aspect of the gaming quite as much as, well, apparently the people who have, put up money for this.
Yeah, I do think it's overpriced, but I also think that for what you're getting, and when we think about how much it costs to make a PC, right, I think that this is reasonable. The one thing I have against this is a lot of the reason that people prefer PC gaming is the mouse and keyboard aspect. And with this, mm-hmm. you absolutely don't get that. It's literally playing PC with a controller and a touchscreen. So just some thoughts. Well, cool. Let's move on to our next news story. Mac, as someone who's all about game preservation, someone who's all about keeping games going, I think you may find this interesting. Diablo 2 Resurrected is going to be coming out, and they added a cool feature that I think is something that should be incorporated more often. This is on GameSpot.com by Jordan Ramey. I hope I pronounced that right. Turns out if you're still playing 2000's Diablo 2 or still have access to your save in that game, you'll be able to transfer your progress into the upcoming Diablo 2 Resurrected Remaster. It all seamlessly transfers over. I'm not even going to read the quote, Mac. You're already smiling. You're already nodding your head. It's self-explanatory what this story is about. What are your thoughts?
Stay a while and listen. sorry, that's a... Yeah. Anyway, I love it. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite games of all time would have been Quest for Glory 1, So You Want to Be a Hero. And one of the interesting things about that game was that you would play through the game and your character would grow from, say, level 1 to level 2, for example. In the sequel, you could import your character from the first game and pick kind of right up where you left off with the same skills and everything that they had accumulated and keep on going. It was fantastic, and I love it. And granted, this is, you know, Diablo 2 Resurrected isn't going to be a sequel, right? It's going to be a remaster.
Right, right.
But being able to bring that character in from the older game is just glorious. It tickles my heart. I love it.
I agree. Like, even if this only applies to 1% of people who play Remastered, right? Because, like, I can't think of a single game from 2000 that I still have the save for, unless I was to dig through and just be like, oh, here's my old PS2 memory card, and hey, my Splinter Cell save data is still on there, right? In that case, and if they remade it and they were like, oh, you can plug it in, I'd be like, okay, this is great. So I think that the functionality and just the care that goes into putting a feature like that in is very, very cool. I really like what they're doing here. And I hope we see it more often, right? I can't imagine that it took too much time and resources to do this. So, you know, do it for the 1% of people who will benefit. I think this is great. Mac, if you were to look at some of your games from 2000 or from late 90s, can you think of any saves that you still have?
Yes. I have a great deal of saves on my original Xbox. I know that that's like early 2000s. And from before then, I had this trouble where I wound up getting a PS1, and then the next console I got was an original Xbox. I had kind of a big gap in the middle.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I had some gaps before. So I know I've got a bunch of saves from the original PlayStation. I've got my memory cards in that closet behind me from my PS1. But I couldn't tell you off the top of my hand other than some games like Final Fantasy VIII, Legend of Mana, or was it Secret of Mana?
Secret of Mana.
Was that the one on PS1?
I believe so.
Okay, yeah. And then, of course, I've got plenty of games for Super Nintendo and such farther back then. But, you know, that's what I've got.
Well, like, to my point, Ralph in the chat says he says that he might still have Diablo 2 save games somewhere. So he's thinking, well, maybe I could even pull up those old characters and not have to do everything over. So, I mean, it's a legitimate thing, you know, that people will use. Galvatron says, when they released Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare Remastered, Activision charged full price for map packs and other DLC. Activision owns Blizzard. Count on them charging for DLC again for Diablo 2. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, they're charging for the remaster, so you know, I can't really blame them. But we'll have to wait and see. Let's move on to our next news story. This one comes from IGN.com by Joseph Noop. I hope I pronounced that right. Valve has officially stopped development on Artifact, its struggling collectible card game based on the Dota universe. Valve made the announcement Thursday, citing poor player count following the game's launch in 2018 and subsequent reboot Artifact 2.0 beta. And then there's a quote where they apologize and all that, and I will not read it. But Mac, were you even aware that Valve had a collectible card game as a Valve fan? I'm a Valve fan.
I think I would say I'm kind of a Valve fan, but yeah, I didn't know about Artifact. It's based on Dota, you say?
Yeah, which I don't play. I've played it, but I'm not a fan of Dota. Like, I don't hate it. It's just not my thing, right? Mm-hmm. Valve is one of the iconic gaming companies, in my opinion. Like, not everyone is really into it, but, like, they make games as well as anyone. Why do they spend time on stuff like this? Like, why are you making a collectible card game when, like, it's almost become a meme that you're not making the things that people want? I don't understand.
So what you're saying is don't make a collectible card game. Instead, make Half-Life 3 or Portal 3 or Left 4 Dead 3.
Well, I will say, Mac, and this is a little bit of a troll, they did make Half-Life 3, and it's phenomenal, and you've got to come over once the pandemic is over and play it, because it's really, really good. Okay. But no, but to your point, like, yeah, why don't they make any of these games that we've been asking for, and they spend time on this stuff? Now, you can do that when you have money, I guess. But Valve, come on, give us, I guess we're not going to get Left 4 Dead 3. We're going to get, what's that game? Back 4 Blood. When that comes out in June. Speaking of that, segue, are you going to pick up Back 4 Blood? Or, because you played the beta, are you into that or no?
I did play the beta. I did give them some feedback on the beta and said that the controls were not especially well elaborated on. I would have liked for them, before they threw you in, to have given you a chance to get comfortable with the controls. Because yeah. I was playing, and I was playing with people who had already played before. I was really dragging my team down because it was stuff like, oh, I think this is the button for interacting. You know, it was a lot of guesswork that I didn't have to do in Left 4 Dead, and that, I don't know. I felt like it deserved something to ease you into it.
Yeah, for sure.
So I might consider going Back 4 Blood.
Yeah, me too. It looks like it'd be a lot of fun. I don't know how much longevity, but it looks like it could be fun. Well, let's move on to a couple other news items. Mac, I stand corrected. So you may remember last week when I talked about the PlayStation VR. I said, you know, why are they announcing this headset when we don't know anything about upcoming games? We don't know anything about, you know, the dev kits have just gone out, and I think this is silly. Well, they kind of mitigated that this week by announcing a few games for VR. Here are some of the ones that they announced that are going to be coming out for PSVR in 2021. Now, granted, this is not going to be on the new VR, right? This is going to be on the existing PSVR, but still, they're making an effort. Doom 3 VR Edition, Song in the Smoke. Now, Mac, would you ever play Doom in VR, or would that creep you out too much?
I don't think that would creep me out.
Modern day Doom, not pixelated Doom, but like modern day, like real graphics, blood in your face Doom. It wouldn't creep you out. Me neither. Fracked, which looks fantastic. You play as a hero who's stuck inside a mountain fracking facility and must fight against an army of enemies. That sounds cool. I Expect You to Die 2, Zenith, and After the Fall. So, Max, 6 VR games announced in one day. I think VR is taking over, man. I think, and we were talking about this because I played some VR with a couple of our viewers this week. I think Mac needs to start researching the Quest 2. And consider that as an option for VR.
Perhaps. I mean, I'm less inclined towards some of the headsets, more inclined toward others. I want a wired solution rather than a wireless, and I want something that I mean, when I purchased my graphics card for my computer, I did so with one that was right at the at the beginning of VR, and it was one of the AMD, the Radeons, what have you, that was supposed to be capable of doing VR, of pushing VR. So not that I was suspecting that I was going to get VR, but you know, just wanted to have the options open. And much in the same way, the next time I do a refresh, I'll probably be, you know, slowly approaching that line, little by little, piece by piece.
Yeah, so if you don't like wireless, then the Quest 2 is not for you. Also, if you don't like Facebook, the Quest 2, not for you. I'd have to do some research and see what the best option is. We'll talk about that offline. But that's it for our news for the week.
All right. Well, now that we've looked at what's going on right now, let's take a little look into the past. We like to call this video game history. And so we're going to focus on some games that came out this week that are either important to gaming as a whole or maybe just important to us individually. And we start off with one that has a near and dear, a special place in my heart, released in 1996 for the PC, Civilization II. Mr. Nice Guy, was Civ 2? No,
not my thing, but I also respect like how great it was. right? I'm familiar.
It really was good. It had a lot of interesting things going on. I loved the technology tree idea in the Civilization games. And as a matter of fact, I'll put that one to the side. Short story about Civilization 2. Loved the game. It was a game that I could just get lost in. Lose sleep to it, lose study time to it, even to the point that when I was in college, sure, I had other games that I could be playing, but I kept going back. It got so bad that I did look at the clock one day and I was like, oh, I've got a final I should probably go to. I said, but no, these Byzantines have it coming. And so I skipped the final. Now, I still passed the class because it was one of those where it was like, you know, there are 5 exams and they dropped the lowest. And, you know, so I wasn't worried. I still got an A. But after that day, I took a long, hard look at myself and I said, you know, that shouldn't have been a decision I thought it was okay to make in the first place.
You had an intervention for yourself.
I did. I had a little intervention. I stood in front of the mirror and I said, Mac, because, you know, that's what I call myself. Mac, you gotta keep it together. And that was the last time that I blew off a final. But it was Civilization 2. It had a hold on me. And, well, I mean, so it's important to me and it's played a role. Another one that is infamous, perhaps. No, not the game Infamous, but rather the 2004 release for the original Xbox of Ninja Gaiden. Now, wait a minute. Are you a Gaiden or a Gaiden man?
I think it's Gaiden. Ninja Gaiden.
Okay. Is it
Gaiden? What do I call it? Now you got me confused. Now, I thought you said that typically that's not your type of game, Ninja Gaiden.
Oh, yeah. It's not typically my type of game. Ninja Gaiden, it's a... Tell you what, I'll go Gaiden, you go Gaiden. We'll hedge our bets that
Ninja
way.
Ninja Gaiden, there we go.
You're Gaiden, I'm Gaiden.
Got it.
So Ninja Gaiden, right? Infamous because of the sheer amount of frustration and anger that people had with that game. Hard as nails. Very much in keeping with the NES offerings and the like. But the reason why I mention it is because you're right. It's not really my type of game. I have a copy, and maybe one of these days I'll go back and play it again. But I watched a man, a cousin of mine, actually, he was playing it and snapped off a thumbstick.
What?
And then broke the controller. He broke the controller playing Ninja Gaiden. And
an NES controller?
No, for the original Xbox.
Oh, got it. I'm totally...
Yeah. Oh, no worries, man. No worries. But he broke the controller. First broke off the thumbstick. And it was just astonishing. It's something that you hear about, right? It's kind of like, oh, yeah, gonna break a controller. You know, you're so angry. But I literally saw it happen to this game. It was a moment. A moment of video game history, at least for me. In 2010, we saw the release of Mega Man 10 for the Wii.
Wow, it's been that long.
It has been. Nowadays, you can see that, you can play that game via the Mega Man Legacy Collection that's on Steam and even on Switch and the like. But for a large chunk of time there, the only way that you could play Mega Man 10, and 9 for that matter, were on the Wii. So I went so far one year to buy a Wii just for that. Thank goodness I got it in time. And then I want to talk about the last one, and I want to touch on this very briefly, and mostly as a way to say that we're going to talk more about it next time, a little bit more in depth. It's something called the Scum Engine, SCUMM.
Yeah.
Familiar?
Simply because it's an option on RetroPie. You can put games on the Scum. Yeah.
Nice. We're going to talk about it a little bit more. It was released this month, so I feel like we've got some wiggle room. But, you know, be aware, for episode 180, Video Game History, we're going to talk a lot in depth about the Scum Engine. What it is, what it does, why it's important, how long it lasted, and, you know, why some of us have such fond feelings about it. But with that little teaser, with that little bit of bait in the water. Prepare yourselves for that next time. And that's been Video Game History for at least episode 179.
Let's talk about the topic of the week, where we talk about something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. This is from... Dude, we need to get one of those air horns. Those are actually pretty dang annoying. But anyway, Luke Plunkett, Kotaku.com, shared this story about the new rumored Nintendo Switch. Now, Mac, this has been something that's rumored for a long, long time. Like, this is not the first time we've heard of this, but more details keep coming out. It says, last year, Bloomberg reported that a new model of the Nintendo Switch would be out sometime in 2021. Today, they're reporting some more specific details, like the size of screen and some 4K news. The original report was very light on details, saying only that Nintendo has looked into including more computing power and 4K high-definition graphics. That has now been clarified to say that this new model will feature an OLED screen made by Samsung, which will be 7 inches across. Current Switch models are 6.2 and 5.5 for the regular light, and feature a 720p resolution. Now, it does do 4K when it's docked, and also it's just going to be bigger. They don't say anything about battery life. But man, like, I want to know from the chat, and I also want to know from you, Mac, like, you don't own a Switch yet, but you had a good experience playing it, playing Breath of the Wild. Do you think it needs a refresh? And do you think it's going to do well? Go ahead.
Okay, so does the Switch need a refresh? Maybe. And I know, I want to say that we talked about this maybe around episode 155 or so, where we talked about the Switch and 4K, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because the Switch, correct me if I'm wrong, does not currently do 4K, even docked.
No, it does not.
And we discussed how that might be a situation where they might have to do some interesting shenanigans to fit the extra data or the extra resolution or, you know, whatever sorts of interesting things that they might have to do to make that work. I think, even though I'm not somebody who has 4K or is even interested in it, I know that 4K is a big deal to a lot of people. And I think if they're going to refresh anything about the Switch, that updated graphics, higher resolution, is what a lot of people are asking for. Now, to be fair, we do know that Nintendo has not exactly put graphical performance at the forefront of their considerations. For example, the Wii for a long time was just... I mean, I think it took, like, third parties to make, like, HDMI cables for the Wii, right?
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I know the original Wii did not come with HDMI.
Yeah.
So you're probably right.
I mean, and the Wii U, of course, had HDMI, but obviously it was, you know, it was kind of a different thing. But nonetheless, I feel like, does it need a refresh? Maybe. Probably. It's been rocking for, what, 4 years now? 5 years now?
Yeah, 5 years, I believe.
It's probably about time for a refresh, and I mean, you could consider the Switch Lite to be technically a refresh, but I think something a little bit more substantive if they're going to actually do something. And yeah, 4K would be great.
Yeah, so my thing is this. The reason that I play Nintendo games is because I cannot play them anywhere else, right? I cannot get Mario, like, in its true form, Zelda in its true form, anywhere other than on a Nintendo console. I don't really care about 4K, because I'm so used to seeing those characters not be in 4K that it really, like, it doesn't even faze me that I'm just seeing it in 1080p, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like when you're playing a 16-bit game, like The Messenger, or, like, what's that other game we just played? Shadow Ninja, whatever it's called.
Cyber Shadow.
Cyber Shadow, yeah. You don't think, oh, these graphics are terrible. You just think, oh, well, this is just the way it's supposed to be. And that's how I feel about Nintendo consoles. So to me, 4K on a Nintendo console, not that important. On the PlayStation 5, absolutely. I want it there. Now, in terms of is Nintendo needing a refresh, I don't know that they need one, but they do this with all of their handhelds, right? They always give us a refresh of some type. They did it with the 3DS. They did it with the DS. I mean, they did it with everything that I can remember other than maybe the original Game Boy. They give us a new model that has better battery life. they trim off some of the fat, they make it a little bit smaller, or they make it bigger on purpose, like the 3DS XL. So I think that this is just something that's on brand for Nintendo. Now, I don't know how it's going to sell, but I'm interested to see what they do. The one thing I hope they don't do, I hope that they don't make a new type of cartridge that only works on that one. Like, I'm not ready for that yet. I have a Switch. Please don't make Breath of the Wild 2 only work on the Switch Pro, if that's the case. Like, make it so that it still works. Same cartridge between both consoles. That's what I want. Mac, we got some comments. Anything you want to read? Should I pick a couple?
Sure. So we've got some comments that it would be interesting with the whole 4K, but most people, most average Nintendo customers don't care about 4K or HDR. And I don't know, maybe that's the case. Maybe I've been listening too much to Galvatron, who does care about 4K and says that playing Switch games in fuzzy 720p hurts my eyes. But then again, maybe Galvatron is indeed in the minority and most Nintendo customers don't care about 4K.
Well, let me just tell him, the 720p on the Switch Pro is still going to apply on the handheld, right? You're not going to have 4K on the handheld screen. Only when it's docked will you be able to play in 4K.
Sure.
With anything other than the Switch, Galvatron, I'd agree with you. I don't want to play a game in 720p, right? But with the Switch, I'm okay with it. Like, I'm just used to it. Like I said, you know, Mario in 720p or 1080. That's just how it's been.
Now, I will say that I actually am someone who doesn't want to see carts go away, cartridges. Mostly and especially because I feel like, well, I've been on about digital distribution and video games before, but, you know, I'm glad that Nintendo has been keeping with cartridges. And I hope that if they do, in fact, do a refresh, that number one, they keep those same cartridges so that you can keep using yours, but that number two, they keep that going for a while now. Just my take.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And Nintendo, by the way, I like that you can take off the Joy-Cons. I like that. Because I can have a set of Joy-Cons for my kids, and I can have a set of Joy-Cons for me, right? So I think that that should be a feature that stays with the new Switch. And that has been our topic of the week.
All right, well, now we turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off the ground. You know what this is. We call it Kick or Kickstart. And the idea here is I'm going to drop a link in the chat so that those of you who are here with us for the live recording on twitch.tv/2nerdsinapod can, you know, take a look at what we're talking about. We'll weigh the virtues and the vices, and at the end, Mr. Nice Guy and I will say whether or not we think it should be kicked out of here or whether we think it should be kickstarted. And we encourage all of you to join us in discussing what you like and what you don't like. There is the link. We are looking at Wild Dose. So, for starters, they are looking for $10,250 to fund this game. In it, you are a cyber junkie in a cyberpunk-style world, and your drug of choice is not so much a drug as it is a simulation that you have to pay for called Wild Dose. Surrounded by cities, noir LA in 2099 or whatever, the Wild Dose is a simulation of wild nature and the like. They're aiming for a release on PC with Xbox and Switch releases as stretch goals. However, at the time of this record, the exact amount necessary to get to those stretch goals is not elaborated on in the Kickstarter. That's kind of unfortunate. You are looking at a $15 minimum buy-in for a PC copy on release, $31 if you want to get in on the beta as well, and they are expecting to release summer of 2022. Maxim is the fellow behind this, a French developer, and yeah, he's building it in Unity. So there's a lot of interesting concepts and interesting ideas inside of this game, things that I like. The low poly artwork is, you know, kind of appeals to me. It's not quite so low poly as like early 3D games on the PS1. Definitely not that low poly, but it does have a sort of, I would say, GameCube 3D low poly feel. Do you think that's a fair?
I'd agree with that. So I'm looking at this and I'm impressed with it. I've been doing some time in VR, and this kind of reminds me of VR chat. I don't know why. It gives off that social vibe. You know, graphics are not amazing, but they're good. You know what I mean? Like, it's clear what they're trying to do here. I'm just watching some of the video right now, and I'm impressed with what I see. Like, if this is going to be a world that they can expand upon post-release, I think that this could be a really, really big thing. Now, what are they charging for this when it comes out? Do we know that?
It doesn't say what the price will be when it comes out, but $15, it's in euros, 12 euros, because France, but $15 is for a Steam key for PC.
Okay. I mean, this looks cool. Like, I don't know what it is. There's something it's missing, but I think it looks really cool, and I like the way they put their Kickstarter together.
Yeah. I quite enjoy it as well. I think it does look good. I think that at the very top, they do themselves a great service by putting Play for Free Wild Dose, the first session, on Steam. So they've got a playable demo for free already on Steam that you can go and you can check. It's built in, was it Unity or Unreal?
Unity. You said Unity.
Yeah, Unity. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure it's built in Unity. We'll stick with that. But yeah, it's
nice.
I mean, it does have that look. It is going for that cyberpunk look, although it is noteworthy that while we do have Cyberpunk 77 out right now, that doesn't mean that there's not, I don't think that means that there's not enough room for more cyber stuff. Although, in a way, you know how in Cyber Shadow, well, lots of cyber going on today, you know how in Cyber Shadow you would go into the cyber realm at certain points?
Yeah.
This very much has that sort of thing where, you know, you take your wild dose and you go into the cyber realm of this, you know, sort of wild land. They do get into it about how a lot of the enemies that you face are of a specific nature and so on. I think it looks really cool. Listen to the, you know, watch the video, read through some of the stuff, give the demo a try, see if it's for you. I think it shows a lot of promise. I agree with you, Mr. Nice Guy. And for that reason, I definitely say kickstart.
Yeah, you know what? We don't get enough cyberpunk type of games. And I think that they're trying to do something unique, and they're doing it well. Like, they check all the boxes as far as stuff that we usually like. I mean, I guess they could ask for more money, but I'm not going to get on them for that. They have a realistic timeline. They have a well-put-together Kickstarter, and it looks like the game will probably be fun. So I'm going to say kickstart this one as well.
Sweet. We are in agreement. And of course, we encourage all of you to let us know what you think as well. I'm seeing so far only kickstarts inside of the chat, so that does bode well. Obviously, Maxim, we wish you the best. Good luck on this. We certainly want to see more, and thanks for bringing your creativity to gracing our show. And that's been Kicker Kickstart.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Nerdflex. A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host, and sometimes y'all are pretty good at it. If you're here live, you do have a job to do. If you'd like to get a multiple choice video game trivia question in the chat, now would be the time to do that. Mac, do we have any announcements? Are we doing a trivia test bank this week?
Well, we do have a sound test. So obviously, there are several sound tests that are still unclaimed. You can find exactly which ones inside of the Discord, so feel free to take a look at that. That's pinned. But listen up. Now, do keep in mind that if you want to hazard a guess, remember to listen carefully and go to Twitter and tweet at Two Nerds in a Pod with the hashtag soundtest. Identify this episode, episode 179, and give us your best guess as to what sound this is. The winners will be graced with perhaps a perler, perhaps a pin, celebrating this podcast, Two Nerds in a Pod. But listen up, and good luck. You'll need it. All right, I hope you were paying attention, and good luck. Now, let's turn to some trivia. See if you can stump us.
All right, so here is the first one. This one is from the Test Bank. It is a difficult question. Final Fantasy, what is the name of the creature who quizzes the party in Final Fantasy IX? I have no idea. And I'm bad at Roman numerals. IX is 9, right?
Yeah.
What is the name of the creature who quizzes the party in Final Fantasy IX? Now, Mac, I haven't played Final Fantasy IX. I don't know if you have.
I've played Final Fantasy IX. I might have even beat it. I can imagine it. I can picture it. And it's a. And as long as I'm remembering properly, I want to say that the name is like Quizmaster. But you run into it in a battle, and then it'll be like, oh, here's a question, and then basically there'll be enemies out, and you know, it'll be a multiple choice, and then attack the one that corresponds to, like, A, B, C, or D, and there. So, I mean, I'm really not confident in my answer.
We can go with Quizmaster, because I have no idea what the answer is.
Quizmaster is the only one that's coming to mind.
You know what I was going to say?
What?
I was going to say it might be Ragtime Mouse, and it turns out that's the answer, so I should have said that out loud before I flipped to the answer.
Ragtime Mouse is the name?
That's the name, and I was definitely not going to say that. I had no idea. But that's the answer is Ragtime Mouse. So we'll move on to our next one. This is in the chat from Spenis. In Mario Kart, what course is designed with so many options that the leaderboard, when you race on it, has nothing but question marks? And what game in the series did it debut? Oh, I think I know.
Good question.
I think it's the Yoshi course.
Is it that one with the spinning egg?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was in Mario... Was it
64?
Was it Mario Kart 64?
Yeah, pretty sure.
Yoshi's... Oh, freak. What was it called? It's the Yoshi one, Spenis. And you're going to accept that as an answer. The Yoshi course. And I believe it was in Mario Kart 64. Do you want to go with that final answer, Mac? Or
Yeah, I guess. I mean... The only name that's coming to mind, and I know that it's wrong, is there's a course called, like, Chaco Canyon, but I know that that's not the one. I can't think of it, but, you know, yes, I know it's got that spinning egg that moves around and sometimes blocks the bridge there, but, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that. I just am not sure if it's Mario 64, but I'm pretty sure it is.
Oh, it's definitely 64. 100%.
All right, let's go with that, Spenis. Let us know in the chat. Mac, would you like to read the last question for us?
Yes. So in Metal Gear Solid, who was the only Foxhound member/boss character who survived and did not die? So I played Metal Gear Solid, but I feel like I was never 100% clear on how, you know, on exactly everything. Because, like, there's Foxhound, and there's Fox Die, and there's, you know, a whole bunch of stuff going on. But if I recall properly, Revolver Ocelot survived. However, technically, because he steals the... Spoiler alert. Because he steals the hand of Liquid Snake and puts it on himself... then, like, Liquid Snake kind of, like, possesses him. It's kind of weird. So you could make the argument that both of them survive and not just Revolver Ocelot. So it's one of those that I'm just not 100% sure. This feels kind of like a trick question, but I'm going to say that that, you know, we're talking Revolver Ocelot slash slash Liquid Snake.
Nice. Now, Spenis, while we're waiting for Galvatron, I'm going to go with Max's answer, by the way. While we're waiting for that, Spenis got the answer in the chat. He says it is Yoshi Valley, so we got that right. Mm-hmm. They brought it into Mario Kart 64 in the Special Cup. Nintendo brought it back in Mario Kart 8 in one of the Leaf Cup. Cool.
Nice. And Galvatron's got back to us that it was Revolver Ocelot. So now I am curious, because we're going to be, you know, nerdy about this. So what would you consider to be the situation there with Solid Snake Galvatron? Does he not count? And thanks for the elaboration of the distinction between Fox Die and Fox Hound there. I had forgotten that, but now it's all come back to me now.
We're going to get a copyright strike.
Yeah, hopefully not. But it is one of those where what's your take on the Liquid Snake thing? We'll take the answer later. Good questions, everybody.
Yeah.
And I hope that the sound test winds up being something that you guys can come up with as well.
Cool. That's been Nerdflex.
So now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
As you know, the law impacts much of video games. More and more each time. But I want us to not be surprised or off-put by the legalese. I want us to be able to embrace it, and that's the feeling here. We're going to talk about some legal stuff and how it relates to video games. And Mr. Nice Guy, there is so much legal news. So much stuff that's going on right now. It was very hard to drill down to one. But I've decided that I want to talk about what I think is the most important development. And unlike usually when we talk about legal stuff as it relates to the United States, this one is purely a European Union thing, but it's gonna make a big difference. So, companies that sell computer devices, computer electronics rather, companies that sell consumer electronics, yep, in the European Union are now required to provide the ability for their electronics to be repaired for up to 10 years. Now, the European Parliament recently enacted a stronger right to repair rule on electronics. Now, what does this mean? It means that manufacturers will have to guarantee that parts are available for their, you know, for their products for up to a decade. However, depending upon the nature of the consumer electronic, it might only be available to professionals, like professional repair companies. So that's one thing. You're guaranteed that for at the very least 10 years, you're going to have parts available for whatever it is you purchase. Additionally, newly developed devices will have to come with repair manuals and be made in such a way that they can be dismantled using conventional tools. Now, these two requirements are ostensibly in order to facilitate recycling, so that a recycling company who's, you know, getting rid of this electronic waste, presumably, can do so without needing specialty tools or without needing specialty training in order to get into said consumer devices. Now, one other thing that's also put in here is that to combat planned obsolescence, manufacturers are going to be required to state how long a product is expected to work and repair it if it breaks down earlier. This differing, of course, by warranty, which, I mean, you know, who among us has not had a device, an appliance, go past warranty and then break down and then, but as it stands, all these changes, right, are meant to apply primarily to appliances, consumer devices in the sense of appliances. However, These same requirements are expected to be extended to include smartphones, laptops, and other consumer electronics sometime in the next few years. And this is big news for those of us who, I don't know, maybe have a cell phone, or maybe enjoy playing a console. The idea that they would have to follow these rules in the European Union does seem to indicate that they wouldn't just make one set of products for the European Union and one set for the rest of the world. It would make more sense for them to follow these. And what are these? You have to be able to make it repairable. You have to have parts available. And you have to include device manuals repair manuals, so that anybody could have a go at it. This is fantastic news for games, for electronics in general, for all of us. And I am cautiously optimistic that this is a step in the right direction that's going to make it easier for us to keep devices that we love working for longer. I know this is not expressly and explicitly about video games, but it's video game adjacent, and by darn it if I didn't think it was fantastic news and worth sharing.
I think it was worth sharing.
Thank you.
It's gonna potentially save us all some money, you know what I mean?
I sure hope so. And I sure hope that it winds up doing things that let us keep everything going longer. I'm at the point where I'm considering getting myself a new phone.
A new iPhone. Did you just say iPhone, Mac? No. Y'all hear that on the audio version where you can't tell who's talking? I think he said iPhone.
Somebody forgets that I've got the power of post-production. I know that wasn't especially a fun legal example, but I mean, I think it means for good things on the horizon. It's sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows everywhere.
Edit that out as well, please.
Nonsense. Anyway, that's just been a little bit of legalese, and there's more to come next episode. Some of the things that I put off, some things about loot boxes, some things about eJoy and Rainbow Six, some stuff about Apple, ooh, some things about Arizona. I mean, there's lots of stuff. You don't want to miss next time.
Let's do it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in to episode number 179. But before we go, we have one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool nerdy stuff we've been into on Xbox, PlayStation, mobile, Switch. ROMs everywhere. Same stuff we've been watching on HBO, Max, on YouTube, on Hulu, on Netflix, on all those services, and maybe even on your old school VHS tapes. If you're here live, you got a job to do. Let us know in the chat right now what you've been watching, what you've been playing. Mac, why don't you tell us what you've been into, man?
Well, I've been watching Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, I think it is. That's the Netflix Dark Crystal one that was put out, I think, a couple of years ago. Okay. I'm enjoying it. They do some really good work with those puppets. I've also been watching, there was a documentary recently about some, I don't want to give it away because it's one of those true crime stories, but that's the thing. If I tell you what it's about, then maybe I'm giving something away, but the title of it includes the word murder. And it's Murder Among the Mormons, and it was a thing that happened in the early 80s. Interestingly enough, before watching it, I had already read a lot of the interviews, the witness interviews, and the legal and the court case. So I kind of knew what was coming from the beginning, but it was interesting. Kind of liked it. I was sort of in between. My favorite thing happened in the last episode when they did a lot of explaining how it was done. And so that was very enjoyable. Also, over the weekend, I watched WandaVision.
What? Are you all caught up?
I'm all caught up.
Nice. Well, I don't know if you still have access, but this week is the finale.
Indeed. Comes out tomorrow?
Yeah, in a couple hours it'll come out. Midnight.
Ooh, nice. Well, yeah. So that's what I've been watching. As for what I've been playing, a little bit of Chasm. I've also played some Strider for the NES. I might be participating in a bit of a tournament. Well, not a tournament. You know, it's a speedrun marathon I might be participating in. But Chasm and Strider are the two games that I said I could speedrun, so I might be doing that. So, yeah, that's me.
Nice. Now, I had a really good time this weekend. Mac, gaming, in my opinion, it's best with friends. I feel like it's more fun with friends, right? That's why we do games every other week, you and I and Metz Girl and Ish Mobile. We do GURPS. And so this weekend, I reached out to Uncle Ruckus and I reached out to Ish Mobile and I said, guys, let's play some Pavlov. Now, Pavlov is a shooter in virtual reality. It's the thing that makes it so great. It's like a super cheap game. It's like a $15 game on sale, right? You can get it. It's on sale frequently. There's a lot of modding. So you have N64 GoldenEye maps. You have Call of Duty Nuketown. You have Halo 3. You have Halo CE maps that people have recreated, and they are brilliant. Like, you know how in Halo you can go on those little jumps that shoot you through the air?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they have that in VR, which, granted, it could make you sick, but it's amazing. So we did some Pavlov VR. We did some old Counter-Strike maps. We did a little bit on Nuketown, Call of Duty. We were just chatting the whole time and shooting each other and just had a really, really good time. It's like being able to go paintball with your friends in VR. So we did that. I also have been playing Ghost of Tsushima. I believe I will wrap that game up this week. Played some Among Us on stream, and it was an absolute blast. Some of the most fun I've had gaming lately. We got 8 to 10 people in from the community and just had a blast on Discord and played a bunch of games, and it was fun. And then Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War, and that's pretty much it for me. As far as what I've been watching, I watched the new Tom and Jerry on HBO Max with my kids. I thought it was decent. Tom and Jerry, like, to me, that's a staple of everyone's childhood. I love Tom and Jerry growing up. What else? WandaVision, of course, and then I restarted watching The Boondocks, Mac. So it's been a good week. What are people into in the chat?
Well, I'll take playing. Rolf is playing Mad Games, Tycoon 2, Minecraft, and Slay the Spire. Uncle Ruckus is playing Valheim, Satisfactory, Madden 21, Call of Duty Cold War, and Apex Legends. And Spenis is playing MLB The Show 20, Madden, Pokemon Trading Card Game Online, Super Mario 3D World, and Fall Guys. Oh, and also, Uncle Ruckus was playing Pavlov with Mr. Nice Guy.
That is exactly right. Now, as far as watching, we got Spenis watching WandaVision and Hell's Kitchen. Great show. Uncle Ruckus is watching The Simpsons, which I don't know if y'all knew, just got renewed for 2 more seasons. I just read that today. He's also watching The Sopranos and Angels in the Outfield. It's a classic.
Man,
movie.
I remember that one.
It's a great one. Like when they're just like all waving their arms, rooting on the team. I remember that scene from the movie. Galvatron watched Tom and Jerry on HBO Max. I did as well. He watched Coming to America on Prime Video. Had you not seen it before? And Shaquille O'Neal wrestling on AEW. I didn't even know that was a thing. And then he also added some playing, if you want to read that. Matt.
Sure. He finished Super Mario Odyssey, Curse of the Dead Gods, and Ninja Gaiden 2.
Nice. Well, Mac, that's been our show. I think you want to take us home this time?
Sure. Thanks, everybody, for coming around. Y'all are the best. You're the best watchers on Twitch. You're the best listeners on podcast platforms. You are also the best game players on insert console name here. But above all, we just like spending time with you. Thanks for coming out. We will hopefully see you again next week, 8 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Central, Tuesday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and keep it nerdy.
Deuces.